Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have John joining me for a postseason episode. Illinois back in the postseason, not the playoff we had hoped. However, a Music City Bowl consolation. Tennessee, Illinois, the first ever matchup of these two teams in college football history. The Battle of the Orange should be a good one.
For anyone watching this podcast, how would they remember which bowl game we're in, Dan?
Maybe that.
Yeah.
Maybe that.
What a nice little touch. I can't believe that the people over at the Music City Bowl sent you an official ornament piece for your shelf.
Yeah, it came in the stocking this week.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Santa wanted to give you that.
Hey, we'll take it. Anytime our team's in a bowl game, make sure to get the decor right. Gotta celebrate. How many t-shirts will you be buying of the Illinois Tennessee Music City Bowl?
I mean, I feel like you got to see them first because it's you got two Pantones of orange that I don't know if they're really going to work well together. So then you've got this. I know that the Illini fans are trying to wear a little bit more blue, but I don't know if the official bowls, if the shirts are going to be this weird dual orange thing going on. So I don't, maybe zero, Dan, is what I'm saying, but also maybe 100. I don't know.
I saw one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. This week driving around, there was a house that had one of those house divided flags, but it was Bears and Packers on the same flag. But I was just thinking how disgusting an Illinois, Tennessee house divided flag with the two different oranges would be.
You're just like, you can tell where one starts and where one ends, but it also is just, it fools the eye.
What are your thoughts on people who do the house divided flags? Do we disavow that?
I mean, it's kind of lame, but it's also like, if that's your thing, sure. there are worse things in the world, but yeah, the Bears Packers one is kind of bizarre, because if you were doing that in, like, I don't know, Denver, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's kind of funny, kind of cool, like, you don't really see that. But doing that in Chicago or anywhere in Illinois, it's like, maybe not.
Yeah, well, I guess talking about the game real quick, I do want to address before we kind of dive in the big elephant in the room, the thing everybody's talking about, and that's Jelly Roll. Jelly Roll for the Illinois-Tennessee basketball game was on the broadcast way too long for my liking, and I'm already concerned that we're going to get three quarters of Jelly Roll broadcast this game.
That's what I think of that. I'm two thumbs down. I don't know what it is. I get it that there's the novelty. But even some of the stuff that we watched yesterday, we're recording this on the 26th, and yesterday obviously being Christmas, they had, I think, Barry Sanders on the broadcast for like the Lions game. And I'm not saying that I don't enjoy Barry Sanders as a human, as a football player, he's great. But there's just, when you have someone integrating into a broadcast that has no flow, or, I mean, he has game knowledge, but Jelly Roll just being like talking about whatever he wants to talk about, I just don't care for it. And it's not necessarily even like the purest in me. It's just like, what are we doing to the experience? Like, I would rather take just no commentary and just hearing the sounds of the game and the guys hitting pads and worrying about pass run calls and all that, and not worrying about what the announcers are saying sometimes. But especially when you add in these superfluous, like, oh, this is a celebrity who's kind of affiliated with things. It's like, I just don't care for it. So that's my take.
I mean, Jelly Roll seems like a great guy, but when they had him on the basketball broadcast, I was like, well, what are we doing with one entire half of Jelly Roll sitting there talking like he knows everything about basketball? And I was done with it. But to your point, I have been liking, I think, ESPN, 4K, some of the streaming services, when the game is on like a 4K broadcast, rather than going to commercials, they will just go to the in-stadium camera, like the very top of the stadium, and all of a sudden it's halftime and you're just like watching the band perform. Like, I guess this is kind of nice. Don't have to sit through like whopper, 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 whopper.
Yeah, no. But however, if someone wants, if any of the networks want to bring in the real Field Pass to help integrate into their bowl game coverage, then Dan and I will get on the call. No questions asked. So I take back everything I said. If someone wants to bring us in, then it's actually good. But for anyone else, nah.
I don't think we ever discussed that we should have cease and desisted Pat McAfee's crew when they're always down on the field with the Field Pass logo. Like, whoa,
Do we have the official trademark for this? Did we file that, or did we drop the ball?
I don't know, but we definitely were before them. But
oh, definitely, yeah.
I don't think we have the bankroll to go up against ESPN in a lawsuit. So,
but if we win,
yeah, Larry Geese,
yeah,
hey, buddy.
Then we just get that we could podcast full time.
Yeah. All right, football talk.
Yep.
The big storyline. It's not Jelly Roll. Luke Altmyer playing in this game, and it sounds like he's going to have like a million fans from Mississippi making the trip up. Not that far of a trip from Starkville to Nashville, and it's good to see him playing in a bowl game. Part of me, I will say, was a little bit ready to just kind of see what else we have in the mix. I kind of wanted to see Carson Boyd and Ethan Hampton figure out who the line of succession could be. I know transfer portal will certainly be in play for our program, but I mean, in terms of trying to win this game, if that's what's most important, which I think we both agree is what's most important, having Luke Altmyer play is a massive, massive help for us.
And I feel like the storyline's nice in terms of, oh yeah, Tennessee was like the big dog that was sniffing around and offering him more money than we ended up paying him. And that's like going to be something that I'm sure is either talked about or alluded to during the broadcast. But just even the fact that this is arguably one of the greatest Illinois quarterbacks of all time and someone who has taken the program to a place where we didn't really think was possible in terms of just consistently being at or near 10 wins each year. And so that's something where him getting a send-off, obviously we want the team to win every single time, but him getting a proper send-off and going out with a big game at the very minimum is something that I'm glad that we get to see that, because the Northwestern game, while it was really fun to watch the blizzard conditions and coming out with a win in that game, him not really getting to put a stamp on his final performance is something that I was kind of hopeful that we would get this opportunity here. So that's my big takeaway.
Yeah. I guess the other thing too, having the opt-outs makes a huge difference. I know the line's already moved from 6.5. Tennessee was a 6.5-point favorite when it opened. They mm-hmm. have plenty of opt-outs on their side of the field. I know starting right guard is probably not going to go. The big one is their wide receiver, Chris Brazell, who's a 1,000-yard receiver. He's going to go ahead and move on to the NFL. So it's not worth it for a lot of these guys to play, but I love seeing Luke stick it out and say, you know what, I want one more opportunity to showcase myself in front of a good team. He'll be an NFL player, but it's not like he's a first or second round guy, it doesn't seem like. So for him, I think the opportunity to showcase what he has one last time and kind of participate and just get his name out there as much as possible is the right move. And, you know, some of the stars, Gabe Akis, JC Davis, you know, Matt Bailey had some season ending surgery, I believe. So couple guys sitting out or opting out, but you know, for the most part, we're going to have a lot more participation from the guys who played the most snaps for us than Tennessee will have. So line has moved farther in Illinois' favor. It's still, I think it's now Tennessee, like we said, -2.5 or so, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. I feel like in bowl season, if you're obviously not in the playoff, and even if you're in the playoff, there's a lot of talk about, you know, opt-outs or transfers or whatever have you. And it's obviously going to affect all four main units, each team's offense and defense's side of the ball. It's like, I feel like we're not as poorly off, even though Gabe is a big one, because that's just someone who, even though maybe his production was there, but maybe his impact in terms of game-breaking plays wasn't as consistent as we would have liked to have seen this season. He was still someone, because he didn't have that, it was mainly due to him having so much consideration. Who's going to step up in that regard, and can anyone put pressure on, or can anyone alleviate pressure on the rest of the line? JC Davis, like you were talking about, that's probably, you know, kind of the linchpin of your passing attack in terms of setting your protections, and that could be something that hopefully Luke isn't holding onto the ball too long. It feels like, though, those are manageable, quote unquote, for an Illinois team that has, you know, more depth than it's had in recent years. But Tennessee, you just look at it and it's like their offense should be fine. You mentioned a couple bigger names in terms of starting alignment and their best wide receiver, but they, you know, their quarterback is playing, they have enough weapons. Heupel is a great offensive mind. So I'm sure they'll be throwing the ball around a bunch. Their defense, though, they fired their DC. They hired Knowles from Penn State. They've got a bunch of guys who are either injured or potentially sitting out or potentially transferring, or guys who are already transferring, guys who have already opted out for the draft. So it's just kind of like you look at the Tennessee defense and it's a real mishmash of like, how do you, and not to say that we can't analyze this game, but it's just like you're almost caught in like this super random assessment in terms of how they're going to look at come game day.
Yeah. You did gloss over them firing their DC, who I have to mention is former Illini defensive coordinator, Tim Banks. So the question that we're always asking, is this a Tim Banks revenge game? Will Tim Banks decide to rejoin the better
revenge
orange,
upon
provide
who?
All of the inside intel? In revenge.
It went from a Tim Banks revenge game to a potential Tim Banks revenge game.
Yes. The field.
But yeah, I guess I did gloss over what was the biggest storyline of the game. It wasn't, it wasn't Jelly Roll. It wasn't Luke. It was actually Tim Banks. And the fact that he got fired, it really robbed us, the fans, and the people who really care about this sport. It, you know, this is exactly what's wrong with college football, is firing Tim Banks. Nothing to do with NIL, nothing to do with the assimilation of talent or the concentration of talent. No. It's Tim Banks.
I will say, after last year's South Carolina game, and kind of the antics that came out, I know it wasn't a playoff. This year it's not a playoff, but it was a good reminder of how much fun those games can be and, you know, the storylines that come out of it and everything. And, you know, Bielema's always looking to make some noise. He's always thinking about business, marketing, all of that. So I'm curious what it's going to be this year. I mean, I'm sure he's got something up his sleeve, not necessarily that he planned anything with the Shane Beamer incident last year. I think that just naturally unfolded, but there's always something that comes out of these games, and just getting to go up against another good SEC program, an 8-4 Tennessee team, a 4-4, you know, in conference team that had losses to Oklahoma, Bama, Georgia, Vandy, some good SEC programs. It's a premier matchup and just another opportunity for us to showcase ourselves on national TV, you know, in a big game. No other games going on, so everyone's going to be paying attention. So you got any predictions of what the big storyline is going to be coming out of this one?
I think, well, we had kind of talked about it, and I'm hoping that Hank Beatty goes for like 200 yards receiving. He does a little oh my gosh, was it Chris Olave in the was it JSN in the Rose Bowl, where it was Ohio State against, I believe it was Utah.
I think that was JSN.
And, yeah, I think it was JSN, because Olave, I think, sat out and went off for like 300 plus yards. So I'm hoping that it's just the Hank Beatty show, because that's a guy who not only was one of my guys coming into the year, but he was on pace, obviously, for a 1,000 yards receiving. And obviously, you can tally up all the all-purpose things, and he's, you know, throwing passes. I wouldn't call it an unsuccessful season for him, but just the fact that he's stuck in the 800s, I would love to see him get there. So that's, I think, what I've got my eye on. I'm trying to kind of make that happen. So if Barry Lunney has got, you know, any free time in the lead up to the game, and he's just trying to listen to random podcasts and he throws on the field pass, I would just say little pop passes to Hank. Four verts, just throw, put Hank on one side and then just throw it only to his side. I don't know. Just, these are things that me, the offensive genius that I am, would do. And so I'm hoping that it's as fun as last year, but I'm hoping there's a lot of offense too. I think with the defenses, with Tennessee's defense having the turnover that it's had, and then our defense not necessarily looking the most competent when they go up against like a pretty good offensive unit, I think that that's going to lend itself to lots of points, and hopefully Luke looking to go out with a bang. Aguilar is pretty good, so two guys just throwing it around the yard and taking care of business. I think what the over under is at, it's in the 60s. I think the last time I checked. So
yeah,
maybe we get a high scoring affair, but I think that that's probably the thing to look out for, is which offense looks the cleanest earliest, and can they ride that to an easy dub.
I will say, to those of you listening and watching the field pass, Jan's being a little bit bashful about his obsession with Hank Beatty trying to get to 1,000 yards. He wants it badly. If Jan was able to, he would give all of his yards.
If we were playing like NCAA football, like, you know, whether it's the current version or yesteryear's versions, it's just like Yeah, you find the couple plays and you switch your formation so that you have your slot receiver be your primary outside receiver, and then you just keep running that play, and then you get Hank Beatty 250 yards and 4 touchdowns, and I don't see why it can't happen is all I'm saying. I mean, you have so many defensive opt-outs that and some people are going to be, maybe slotted in the slot corner position that may not have as much game experience, and Tennessee has enough good athletes, so I make no assumptions about us just, running up and down the field on them. But I also think that that's something where you can probably pass on them a little bit easier. And I feel like with J.C. Davis out, we look to establish the run more. But at the same time, I don't really know if our rush unit is going to be able to go out there and assert itself against a pretty good SEC team. And like you were saying, they only lost to really quality opponents, and so they have enough talent there that I don't know if we're going to quite be able to impose our will on the in the rush game. So then that might lend itself to just throwing the ball around the yard, and I would love to see that.
The glass half full outlook on Hank Beatty's production, not necessarily continuing toward the end of the season, is because I would say Hudson Clement stepping up and becoming a much bigger part of the offense the last few games, and another guy who will play in this one, and hopefully, we get to ride his momentum into next year along with Colin Dixon, who's had a very solid year as well. So, there are certainly weapons on the Illinois offense that will continue to be there going into next season. And I don't know if you want to touch on those receivers. Look like you're ready to jump in.
No, it's a great point that you make, because that almost feels like what we had last year with Pat and Zachary is what we could have going into next year with Colin and Clement. Like, that's something where maybe it's not quite as refined and polished, maybe not the high end upside, but thinking about, and this is more of like an off season consideration, and I don't know if we'll hop on the pod and talk about all things, cause it's a 365 day, calendar for college athletics. So it's like, I don't know exactly how we put a bow on, cause then you have the prep sign, and then you got the transfer portal open, then you got the transfer portal closed, but then you got guys signing, and then it's all of a sudden there's another wave of people trying to transfer out. And so I make no bones about like thinking that we have a firm grasp on when this will end, but I don't know if wide receiver is really this need where maybe it's been in the past and you have to go try and find guys like a Boak or a Clement, and having the stable that they do of even the young guys, like the preps that they have signed in the past couple of years. As you were talking about that, I was just thinking about how it's so nice to have two high floor, but pretty high ceiling options in Dixon and Clement in terms of what we have going into next year. And obviously Boak is a kind of guy who he was really boom or bust, I feel like, in terms of the, you just throw it up to him or you run him on a slant in the goal line, and that's great. But maybe if he refines his game, he can become that third guy. So you're probably still, searching around for someone, but those two guys, it'll be nice to see them kind of go. And that's where the quarterback obviously becomes huge, because Luke having those two talents and Pat and Zachary is something that helped him really ascend last year. So you find a guy who can help, who those two guys can help ascend as well. Or, it's a symbiotic relationship between the quarterbacks and receiver room. So I'm not saying that, they're just going to help any quarterback become great, but that's something where it becomes very appealing. And not that you can't look for someone, but I hope that, they throw it around the yard enough, and I guess my phrase of the podcast is throw it around the yard, because I've caught myself, I think, saying that 3 times in my head, and I'm trying to think of what synonymous phrase I can throw in there as a result, but it's the throw it around the yard pod. Clement and Dixon, more so Hudson, like, he was very productive. I mean, he looked like their best wide receiver there towards the end, and that's something that I think we were expecting when we saw him transfer in. That was something that seemed like, that seems like a guy who should be able to slot in fairly early. I guess it took him a while to integrate into the offense, but it seems like he's fit very well, and that's a guy who I think can be outstanding next year.
Yeah, and I guess you mentioned it briefly, but we'll probably hop on the pod once the transfer portal closes and we know who's on the roster going into next season. Opens up, I think, January 2nd is when the portal's officially open. When that closes, we'll talk that, but I do want to maybe we give a little tease of like quarterback talk, because there's so many options out there right now. A lot of big names have hit the portal. Is there anyone you have your eye on? It's not like we have any inside intel here, but I'm like curious where your head's at. What type of quarterback, if any, do you think, would be a good fit for us to go grab in the portal?
My biggest name who hasn't hit the portal yet is the kid from NC State. I think it's AJ Bailey. And I don't know if he is a guy who hits the portal, but it's more of like a program that is obviously in the Power Four, had a productive year. I don't know if I necessarily want to take the, like, I know the kid from South Carolina who was either the backup or maybe the third string, who was a former top 100 recruit at Ohio State, transfers to SC, doesn't beat out obviously Lenora Sellers, and he's coming back. So, you know, you can look at those kind of guys. I would rather look at a guy like Lincoln Kindholz, who's the backup at Ohio State, who might just be more of a plug and play guy than who's older. And even though the kid from South Carolina is, you know, not young, but he doesn't quite have the experience or the practice reps or just the age and maturity. I think I would look at high end backups like that, but I think I would rather go to like an ACC or a Big 12 program. And the Big 12 is a little bit more resource laden, so you might not be able to poach a guy from a program that's productive like that. But I think you can probably, you know, however you back channel to Bailey's agent and gauge interest, he would be, I feel like, perfect because he's just been productive. But that's, and at a level that is competent, but not something where, like, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of the kid from North Texas or the kid from Harvard. You know, these guys who put up pretty gaudy numbers, but some of it's also kind of like the similarity that I'll draw is Ohio State quarterbacks going to the NFL. And sometimes it's like the level of competition. These guys are pretty good, but can they raise their game up to the Big Ten level or to just the Power Four level in general? Because when your receivers aren't wide open, if you don't quite have the arm strength or if you don't have the ability to discern early and often who you should be throwing it to because you can't read the coverage because you're going up against a more sophisticated unit than you were when you were playing FCS or G5 ball or G6 ball. Like, that's something where I'm not necessarily as sold, but I do understand that people want productive passers, so I'm not necessarily against that. And then if you're looking at a guy like an AJ Bailey, it's like, okay, well, he's going to cost a lot if he does hit the portal. So, like, I get that. It's an economics thing, but I just also want to make sure that we capitalize on this momentum and not just settle for, you know, the guys that we have in the stable right now could be great, but I also don't think that when we're talking about wide receivers who should be super productive next year and hopefully, you know, retooling the offensive line like they have through the prep signings, but also the JUCO guys that they've brought in, and I'm sure they'll try and spend a little bit on a premier tackle. So that's something where I feel like you can really capitalize here and maybe go out and spend some big bucks. But I know I just said a lot to say one name, but it's also, that would kind of be where I would like to sit is, yeah, probably not taking like a transfer backup from the Big Ten or the SEC. Would ideally like a starter who is very productive for a year or two in the ACC or Big 12.
Yeah. Every time you said AJ Bailey's name, I'm just picturing AJ Bush and Aaron Bailey just combined.
Mm-hmm. Did I mess up his name?
I think you're right. You're right. That's his name. Okay. I'm just picturing two because former Illinois quarterbacks.
No, I was doing the same thing where I was like, wait, this name sounds too familiar in my brain, and I've read it enough. And see, that's the whole thing. It's like when you're reading all these names and you're not saying them out loud, then obviously Bailey is an easy name to pronounce. But like some of these things, you're like, oh yeah, I don't exactly know how to pronounce Lincoln Kindholz's name. Like maybe it's something completely different, but like I've read it enough that I know that that's a guy that I would like. But AJ Bailey, I'm like, I know that I've read the name and I can say it, but I'm like, is that actually his name? Because yeah, then yeah, AJ Bush and
I just picture him as a big lefty that just loves to run the football, just a running quarterback, because mm-hmm. that's what those two guys, they were just great athletes that would run the ball more than they throw the ball. But all good names. I'm with you on kind of like the Harvard Jaden Craig kid that was floated, that was, has had a good year with Harvard, but I'm like, has he played the same caliber of athlete? That I always have hesitation with a kid like that making a pretty substantial leap to Big Ten football. There's plenty of good names in the portal. I would stay away from a kid like Dylan Raiola, who I think comes with a little bit of baggage, potentially the off the field stuff. And I don't know that he's the right culture fit for what Brett and Barry Lunny are looking for. But
well, he's got to go fulfill the prophecy of going to Texas Tech. That's
exactly.
That's
how
he's got to be baby Patrick Mahomes.
And then Mahomes, yeah, he'll just go ahead and hit the Texas Tech to Kansas City Chiefs pipeline now that
Exactly.
Mahomes is down. But yeah, I like a guy like Brendan Sorsby, the Cincinnati quarterback. What I think Illinois will probably do, just given that I know they like Carson Boyd, is they'll probably just, I would think, look at a 1 year guy or maybe 2 year guy at max, because I think they do want to give Carson Boyd an opportunity. They like his arm. He's ready to go, I think, at this point, at least see what he's got, see if he sinks or floats. And I don't know. Ethan Hampton, to me, he's played some college football, and he had obviously the big marquee win when he was at Northern Illinois over Notre Dame, but he doesn't have this big lofty resume to sit on. And I don't think we're at a different tier in the Big Ten now where we can afford to spend some money. I know we did a little research on what you can spend on a quarterback and, you know, what you probably should spend on a quarterback, and probably get close to that $2 million mark. If you really have someone you like, maybe go a little bit above that, but you know, I don't think we're, I don't know what Rail is going to fetch or some of these other guys. DJ Lagway from Florida is in the portal. There's a lot of guys who probably haven't even hit yet that will. And we certainly will be a big player, I think, for somebody. And we have the money to spend. So I think someone like Sorsby, you know, could be on the wish list. I think, you know, he's in that upper echelon. He may be shooting a little bit above what you know, we may be competitive for, but if we could get a guy like that, I think he gives you a great option. He has experience. He's put up great numbers, played in some big games, started his career at Indiana, then went to Cincy. So he's familiar with the Big Ten. And I think a guy like that would be a great fit, kind of as a 1 year stopgap, and see what Carson Boyd has. But I think regardless, it'll probably be a pretty open competition. I think they're going to give Carson Boyd the opportunity to try to prove himself and maybe work his way as QB1.
Yeah. And I feel like when you were talking about Ethan Hampton, this is no disrespect to him, but this is what you then followed up with talking about the echelon of program that we're in. I feel like, and I don't want to use the word settle, but relying on him as your starter or him or Boyd, if that's like your case, that feels a lot like what, you know, Minnesota or Iowa has been doing in the past, let's call it 5 to 10 years, in the sense of like, well, we're going to, you know, watching Max Brosmer play on Sundays or Thursdays or whatever is interesting, because that's like a guy that they took who was an FCS transfer up to Minnesota. And obviously he's in the NFL now, but I don't know how long he's going to be in the NFL. But that's something where, you know, taking a guy who seems like a reliable, you know, smart, heady player who can make some of the throws, but you're not necessarily looking to just achieve that as your baseline. And I think that they've done that with the prep prospects that they've signed, in terms of just hopefully having enough scratch tickets that one of them hits and you win the lottery. And Boyd might be that guy. It just, once again, you don't want to take like so much of a retraction next year by just saying, okay, well, we're going to try and develop a couple guys. You can try and develop them, you know, in the offseason with these extra bowl practices. Maybe, like you were saying, getting some reps in the game. Even if the game state is pretty close, maybe you somehow get a package in there or a series in there for some of the backup guys. But hopefully they blow them out enough that you can see what you have in Hampton or Boyd. But that will be fascinating to see how they attack that transfer market, because I don't think that they need to go high end. And I mean, honestly, like, everyone loves to look at Indiana as like the base case for how you maximize every single thing at every single point in your program development. And it's like, well, that's obviously, they, you know, you want to talk about hitting the lottery. They got every single thing right, but they weren't, you know, spending incredible dollars. I mean, I know that they had to, like, they found good high-end transfers that they paid a lot of money, but it wasn't like they were going out there spending as much as Ohio State was, when everyone was like, oh, they have a $20 million roster, or Texas Tech. So that's like something where I feel like that illusion of needing to be like, oh, we need to push all our chips in on this one big name quarterback just doesn't really need to happen. But you still want to, you want to be prudent about it, but you still want to take one of those big swings. You want to, you're a Big Ten program. You're operating in a different echelon. You want to not be a has-been within even that, the power two. So to keep entrenching yourself in that tier two firmly, and maybe giving yourself a shot to either be, you know, oscillating between tier one and tier two, or just once again, making sure that you're at the top end of tier two each year and then giving yourself a bite at the apple for the playoff. Like that's where they need to be. And so that's where I just want to make sure that I don't want to like come off as saying like they need to do everything for a quarterback, because there's a lot of good pieces in place, but they definitely can't stand Pat.
Yeah. And I guess we know that Brett Bielema and Barry Lunny kind of have a type. It's the, you know, good decision maker, quick decision maker, people who can kind of read defenses fast. You think about Tommy DeVito, you think about Luke, who he kind of had a gunslinger, I feel like, tag on him when he came, but like he's protected the football just as well as Tommy DeVito did, makes good decisions with the ball. Even going back to UTSA when Barry Lunny had Frank Harris, the QB there, who was a great quarterback as well. Like, I think they're not looking for the Dylan Rayola, you know, gunslinger, to make some crazy plays happen. They want someone who's going to stick within the framework of the offense. And they honestly haven't really, I know both DeVito and more so Luke have used their legs at time, but neither of them have been a kind of a run first type of guy. So, you know, I don't think they're necessarily looking for this big dual threat type of QB either. They have the running back stable and O-line that they don't need to have a QB that can scramble. And it's a nice luxury to have, but I don't know that that's necessarily a priority for them.
Yeah, which is where maybe I'm not giving Hampton enough credit as an athlete, but I do think they like it as like the upside, so that you have the threat on those RPO plays, or because they run so much of obviously their pass game through the RPO system, that then you add the quarterback run tag on that as well. And it just makes it so dynamic that, you know, defenses have to wait even just a tick longer, and then you get some kind of exploitable option. So that's where you want to go big game hunting so that you can get a guy like that who has that athletic upside, so that you can keep some dynamics within the offense. But to your point, it's not going to be like, I don't really know if Lenore Sellers had hit the portal, like that's a guy who he doesn't quite have the refined arm talent. Like he's got arm talent in terms of power, but his accuracy isn't quite there. And he'd be a guy who, you give him to Barry Lunny for 5 years or 4 years, then I'm sure he would be a clear top 10 pick or something like that. But you maybe don't want to find a guy like that. Or I know DJ Lagway is a bit more of a refined passer, but he just was under too much duress that you might lose some confidence. So it's like, they know how to weigh those things better than you and I do, but it's interesting looking at, to your point, the kind of mold of quarterbacks that they've had, where it's, you can't be throwing double digit interceptions in a year. Like that's just something that they prioritize taking care of the football. That's like the biggest thing. And that's Brett's football 101 coming through even as quarterback play, but you still can be dynamic, and the quick decision-making so that you can be productive is something that I'm very curious to see like what names start getting leaked and whatnot. And also, even as we're sitting here talking, like thinking about the Hudson Card versus Luke Altmaier battle and debacle and all that, in terms of like, oh man, that first year, it seems like we really should have had Hudson Card. And you know, who knows, the whole butterfly effect thing of if he was in our program, maybe Hudson Card has a super productive 2 years and is in the NFL right now. But having Luke Altmaier go down is, like I said before, like one of the greatest Atlanta quarterbacks ever. Like that's something that can't be discounted in terms of the decision making that the brain trust of Bielema and Lunny made. And that's like, I maybe we'll touch on this a bit too. I don't know if this maybe segues into it, but like, I don't know if the coaching carousel has quite stopped or what movement will happen in the coordinator level, but I think Barry Lunny should be safe, ? But like, that's something where if you got to prioritize that post bowl game to just like lock him in, because if he gets to choose a quarterback, you keep the same offense around just for the entirety of, you know, hopefully the 20s of the Atlanta, and he gets like a really nice job instead of trying to take like a lower job. That would be, I think, my biggest priority coming out of the game is making sure that you keep Barry Lunny on staff, just because his ability to choose a quarterback seems to be fairly proficient in terms of not only the guys from the MAC that they've grabbed to be backups over the years, who seem to be high quality guys, also their prep prospects. Like the fact that Trey Petty is transferring is not necessarily, like, it's sad because he seemed like a great talent, but it also is something where it's like, if that's the guy who's transferring out, that's like great, 'cause you're recruiting great talents behind him. Right. And then having a guy like Luke in the system only emboldens you to go get a great quarterback out there, hopefully in the transfer market.
Yeah, I certainly hope Barry Lunny is still with us next season. And then as of now, I do think he will be here. I know we got a guy like Art Sitkowski still on staff that I think is a, I don't know that he's necessarily ready to be an offensive coordinator, but having him there with the quarterbacks is a great kind of carryover should Barry Lunny decide to go elsewhere, pursue a different opportunity. But, I think Barry and the offense had a great year overall. The last few games down the stretch sputtered, and I think there's a better chance than not that he ends up with us still next year, which would be great. Like you said, pick a new QB and see what we can build from there and see what we got next year. But on the other side of the ball, I'm very curious to see what Brett does with Aaron Henry, because it's a guy who played for him super close, and Brett's always talked about, I don't really hire guys that played for me, and this seemed to be kind of the one exception. So now he's in the conundrum where the defense didn't necessarily have the year that people had hoped, and I'm sure that Brett had hoped. And now he's sitting at this kind of crossroads of do you go ahead and see what we can do next year and give him another bite at the apple, or do you try to go out and see if you can upgrade in the coaching carousel? And Brett's used the NFL coaching trees before to look at options, and I know typically that's not till January. So a lot of teams have already hired DCs and there's been some movement already, but he's been pretty patient in years past. So I don't know, just because we haven't seen anything yet, like Tennessee axing Tim Banks doesn't mean that change isn't coming. But it also at the same time wouldn't necessarily shock me if he's like, you know what, I'm riding with Aaron Henry. I believe in Aaron Henry and want to run it back. I don't think that would be the popular decision for the fan base, but I could see that happening as well.
Yeah, and that's something where I thinking back to when he first assembled his first staff in Champaign, I get it that like essentially the factory reset allows you to kind of get like a great cast of characters, and you're not necessarily going to have a guy who's a sitting DC somewhere come into an entrenched program and feel like he has the ability to go upwards. But that's something where, like, that was great that they were hiring guys who either were sitting DCs, who were former DCs, who had that font of knowledge that they could apply to Illinois immediately in terms of them devising a defense that turned the corner in 21 and then set them up in 22 for, obviously they had NFL talent on there, but that was something where they also went out and executed. And there, you could argue that there's NFL talent on this current defense, and, not as much, but there's enough that it should be more productive, and those guys should be utilized better. So I do like that, trying to find the new young talents in the defensive world is something that, staying young in that sphere is good, because I think that especially with the way that offenses are evolving, you need guys who are creative and can think on their feet in terms of the way that defenses need to react to that. But when I think you look at the defensive staff as currently consisted, like, or currently comprised, like, that's something that needs to, you need someone who has like who is either a current DC or a former DC, and whether they're the DC next year or they're helping Aaron Henry out, I don't know, but that's something that I feel like needs to be prioritized. And where does that come from? It's going to be intriguing to see how Brett threads that needle, because, like you said, he's a former player who he speaks so highly of. It felt like probably like what people think of Jim Leonard in terms of just this shoe-in to be a great defensive mind forever and ever. I think Brett probably thought Aaron Henry is on a similar trajectory, and the fact that it quite hasn't worked out yet doesn't mean it can't work out in the future for Aaron, and maybe it hopefully works out at Illinois if he does stick around, and if he doesn't, then I hope he bounces back and continues to ascend somewhere else. But that's something where you look at the defensive staff and you have a lot of experience, but it can't just be Brett pulling the entirety of the defensive unit. It felt like, once again, that first staff that he put together was it had the benefit of the reset, but you had enough collaboration that Brett could obviously input and settle disputes, but he could focus on recruiting and didn't have to worry about, okay, how are we going to take care of our defensive efforts in a given week?
Yeah, you invoke Jim Leonard's name, and that's my pipe dream. If we could get him to come back and coach the defense, that's what I would love to see happen. But with the
If we
Broncos, he seems like he's enjoying himself, so.
Yeah, I was thinking, because even thinking about then the opposite. Like if we lost Barry Lunny, then I'm thinking of like, oh, how do we get Shielhouse back to Champaign? Because he's like slated probably to be the next, like just him being on McVay's staff probably has him slated for some head coaching interviews, which then, you know, he keeps proving himself. So maybe he bypasses college altogether, but that would be something where, to your point, like that's my pipe dream. If we happen to lose Barry Lunny, is then you bring him home, pay him a bunch of money. And yeah, if you have to reset both coordinators, I think you could do a lot worse than the pipe dream of Nathan Shielhouse and Jim Leonard. That would be unreal.
Yeah. Put us in charge of Larry Geese's donations and we we'll go get ourselves an all-star team staff.
Mm-hmm.
Just bypass whatever Brett wants and let the field pass choose our next coordinators.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Josh hasn't thought about this at all. No.
Yeah. I do wonder if you put it to like a crowdsource vote of Illini fans, you're able to weed out any bad actors and just be like, all right, only Illini fans, you vote on this. Who do you want as your coordinator? I bet you Jim Leonard and Nathan Shielhouse would probably be arguably the two best options just because, I don't know, their familiarity with the program already and their Jim Leonard's tie to Bielema. Those would be great.
Yep. It'd be the rare occurrence where, the young guns that are rising in football would be tied enough to our program that us desiring them wouldn't be illogical on our end, but it also wouldn't be illogical for us to be. It's like, I remember back in the day when the Bears were going through head coaches like no one's business. And I remember hearing like on sports radio, be like, well, you have to call, Bill Belichick or talk to his agent because, you have to explore every single option. And if it takes enough money, it's like, you can say that, but that it, just because it kind of fits doesn't mean that it would fit for Bill Belichick to go to Chicago. Whereas, once again, it fits for those two guys if they would like, and if they think in their assessment of their careers that going and being coordinators in college still helps them keep ascending, which I think it would, as long as, they don't get promoted after this year. So we'll see. But that would be the rare marriage of the hot commodities actually fitting for our school. But I also then, in the same vein, could see it where both coordinators are back next year, and I'd be happy on one end and I'd be a little bit perturbed on the other end. So.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to get into our predictions, our score predictions and players of the game?
Yep. I am going to go. I feel like you just kind of have to, especially after last year. I mean, the fact that you, especially Hank Beatty and his performance on that third down catch, it just ingrained in my brain is when South Carolina was gaining momentum back and then he takes over. Josh McCray is just running all over them towards the end of the game. Hopefully that's like, okay, I'll go Caden Fagan in that same vein to run that parallel. He just kind of wears him down. And even though I want us to throw the ball around the yard, even though I want, 500 yards passing for Luke in his send off game. I think Caden Fagan will be my player of the game. Let's give him a $120 rushing, 2 touchdowns, and sealing the game similarly with a nice long run. And I'll go with the final score of what I said, 60 something. So I'm going to go
61.5 is the over under. And as we said, Tennessee's a 2.5 point favorite in the game.
So I'm going to go Illinois 38-35.
Wow. All right.
Points.
Another win.
How about you?
I'm going to go, I feel like I just have to. I got to go with Luke Altmyer, QB1. It's his final game, his send-off. I want 400 yards out of Lukey this game. 400, like you said, it could be a shootout. Tennessee's without, I think 4 starters on their defense. He's going to have, I think, full reign. I'm sure a game like this, too, the coaching staff kind of wants some input from the players on, like, what do we want to do in this game? We've got some trick plays dialed up, Let's throw everything we got left in the tank at them. And I think Luke's going to have a proper send-off. So give me Luke Altmyer as the player of the game. I'm going to go Illinois. I was actually – you said 38-34. I was going to say – or you said 38-35. I was going to say 38-34.
Mm.
So give me Illinois 38-34. Gets to their 19th win in the last 2 years, which would be the program record. Currently tied for the program record over a 2-year span. I think it's like last few times it's been like 1905 or something like that, where we've had 18. We tied the record, but there's also more games now per season with all the bowl games and things than there probably were then. But 19 wins, if we could do that over a 2-year span, would be a little cherry on top. I know there are little murmurs after we didn't make a playoff, the fan base kind of just blustering a little bit, being upset that we didn't make a playoff because the expectations were so high. That 19 wins in a 2 years period for Illinois football is literally unmatched. We've never done that before, and yet I think a couple weeks to calm down after we didn't make it. I think people have come back down to earth and are happy to see this team play another time. And I think we find a way to get it done again. Brett loves to slay the SEC in the bowl games. So we'll be ready to go. Should be a fun one. And I'm hoping our team comes out on top.
Yeah, you would have a nice crescendo to end the year, kind of like last year, where you would have the fun snow game versus Northwestern. You'd have a win, or I guess the recruiting class is first, but then you top it off with a really nice recruiting class, and then you get a bowl win against an SEC team. Like that, once again, it's incredible what Brett Bielema has done with this program. And yeah, as much as we can maybe nitpick or even talk a little bit macro about maybe the direction of the program and what we would like to see done differently, it's still the fact that we can have those nits to pick is unbelievable. So, as we're signing off for 2025 and what our sixth season of doing this, the fact that we can sit here and talk about a program record of wins over a 2 year span is unreal. And I am so glad that we have Josh Whitman. I'm so glad that we have Brett Bielema. I'm so glad that we have Luke Altmyer. And I'm so glad that, we've had the run the past couple of years that we have in terms of establishing ourselves as a real player in college football, especially with the changing as much as it is.
And fair warning to Josh Heupel, if you see Brett Bielema walking across the field, going with the T-bar, stay very far away from that man. Because you don't want to end up out of a job next by the end of next season, okay? So that's our warning to you. Let that be our gift to you, that knowledge. Make sure you stay clear of Brett Bielema if you see him walking over to your sideline, and you will have your job and you'll be just fine. So I don't want to make you a rival, but if you mess with our coach, you're going to get the horns from the boys on the field pass. So appreciate you guys as always for listening. It's been a great season. As we said, there'll probably be another episode or two when we get some news on transfer portal front in a few weeks. But until then, enjoy this bowl season. Enjoy this era of Brett Bielema Illini football, and we'll see you next time. Go Illini.